Yes. Good. Okay. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, in this world of plastics and problematic recycling, we are, as a church, in the process, not this sort of ugly thing, we're in the process of designing some keep cups that are going to be great, with the Skylark logo on, just so that we don't have to keep having 14,000 things put in a bin that can't be recycled. You know, we thought in getting a recycling bin over there and cardboard cups that we'd be okay, but we realise there's plastic in the cardboard and no one will take it, so we're getting on that as fast as we can. We're also going to try and get some water bottles too for everybody up here. So we're doing our little bit, and let's do as much as we can. Okay, now to talk about Spring Harvest. We had such a great time at Spring Harvest. There's a team of 11 of us, including Aria, and it was just phenomenal to be there, to have a venue. Nikki was speaking in the morning sessions, and we all led worship in the mornings. Nikki was teaching with a guy called Chris Rogers, who's from the Spring Harvest planning team, and that was phenomenal. In the afternoons, Nikki and I did a church leaders sort of Q&A discussion on a couch thing, which was good. We've had lots of great connections made. I mean, even one with the Christian Union of the Armed Forces, haven't we? They want us to be on their council of reference for helping a couple of the directors who are a married couple and just working out how to minister and that kind of thing together. So it's just really exciting what God is doing. We also did some filming for TBN, TV channel, and that was a humbling experience, I tell you. You know, you think, oh, I'm on TV and there's all these cameras everywhere, and then they get out the little powder. Just got to get rid of some of the shine. And I was like, gosh. I remember when I was teaching, the kids used to take the mickey out of me. They're like, sir, you know when the sun's shining, if it hits your head, we're all blinded. I'm like, you can be on detention if you just keep talking. So anyway, these guys would just be doing this. She was doing this, and then the tragic moment happened when she got the thing, and she's like, on the top of my head. It was the saddest moment of my life. I sat there. It probably wasn't, but, you know, drama. And then they went, sat down, ready to go, clicker board went and everything, and then the cameraman put his hand up and said, still a little bit of shine left. So she came back for more. I'm like, oh my gosh. But anyway, that's good. It's good to stay humble. I'm not sure if that's the biblical definition of humility, but it was good. Yes. Well, that, and then in the evenings, we were hosting and leading worship and speaking on a couple of nights in a venue, the Encounter venue, which was brilliantly named for us. It was a chance for us to just go on a journey with the people who came along, to encounter God and to grow in relationship with each other. We had community times, we had a blast, and then at the last minute they threw on us, would we do at the end of one of our sessions, an hour and a half encountering Holy Spirit, receiving more from the Holy Spirit session, which we of course said yes to, and that was just an amazing time too of connection. So many people flooded forward to be anointed with oil. Sue was loving it. She'd taken three little bottles of oil just in case, and they were needed. So yeah, we just had an incredible time, and it's always amazing to see the DNA from this place go out to other places. Something that we have is required in the body of Christ. And that's not because we're boasting, that's just because God's building his church and there's lots of different flavours, and our flavours needed. And so we were really excited to be there. Thanks for releasing us. Thank you to the worship team for having a depleted worship band while we were away. I know you guys had an awesome time. Anyway, let's crack on. I'm going to start by telling a little story. And for many of you in the room, you know that Nikki and I used to be teachers, and I just said it with my shiny head. But some of you will not know that we were secondary school teachers who felt a call from God to, we saw a need in schools. We saw that there were loads of subjects taught by embarrassed history and math teachers, amongst others, sex education, relationships, bullying issues and all sorts. And they had their schemes of work to work to, but they didn't have the drive and the passion because it wasn't their natural area of gifting. And so these very important things in schools were being taught, but not being taught perhaps as well as they could be. And we had a stirring in us that we could go in and make a difference and bring a godly perspective into these really important issues of life. And one day God called us, and we left, and we handed in our notice, and then we did our first year in the band. And many of you in this room supported us financially to get through that year, and you know that we've had this faith adventure, this faith journey that has led to us leading the church now. And so many of you are a part of that. But at the end of our first year, we were really tired and we didn't have any money left. People in this church blessed us with a holiday beyond our wildest dreams. It was crazy. It was one of those holidays that you kind of felt guilty for having because you knew that some people in the church were supporting us maybe a tenner a month. And here were we. We were about to get on a plane and go to an amazing five-star holiday. It's like, maybe you don't need our support after all. But they blessed us with this holiday and we went to Kenya to a beach. Malindi Beach Hotel, five-star, all-inclusive, wonderful holiday. It had fantastic food, fantastic hospitality. We had our own waiter, five-course meals. It was seriously insane. And we got chatting with the waiting staff. And there was one guy in particular called Robert. He was absolutely lovely. And we got on really well with this guy. And we told him about ourselves, and we told him that we were Christians. He's a Christian too. In fact, they were always playing worship albums in the bar, really low music, but it was always English worship albums. And we were asking them, why are you playing that? Whose is that? And they're like, we're not really supposed to, but we always have worship going. Most of the staff in the bar are Christians, and we love having worship going. So it's awesome. But yeah, we told him we were Christians. And a couple of days later, he came to our table, he leant over and he said, my wife, Christine, would love to welcome you to our home. And we're like, oh, thank you, that's so kind. And then the next meal, my wife, Christine, would like to welcome you to our home. Thank you. The next day, my wife, Christine, would like to welcome you to my home. She'd love to see you. And we're like, thanks, that's so kind. Now, we had to make a decision, didn't we? Are we going to keep saying, thanks, that's a lovely thing, or are we actually going to do it? So we said, yeah, we'd love to come. We'd love to come to your house. You know, hospitality is a real gift that some people have. And if you don't take people up on hospitality, sometimes it can hurt. The next day after his shift, he came over to us and he said, look, you can't tell anybody you're coming. Okay? I'm not, my boss, they can't know this stuff. That, you know, I would be in a lot of trouble. I'd lose my job. So please don't tell anybody. Now, what comes straight into your head, having watched loads of films, is, oh my gosh, maybe we should leave a little note on the bed. So the cleaner can find it. I went with Robert, the waiter. He knows where I am. He stole us. But anyway, we didn't do that. Probably because we didn't think of it. But anyway, we met him outside covertly after his shift, and we got into a little tuk-tuk, and off we went to his village. And we went down the sort of bouncy general roads, off-road, then to off-road completely, like just over dirt tracks and all sorts. And we're getting further and further away from civilization, thinking, what have we done? Like, why are we doing this? Where are we going? We don't know where we are. We're in the middle of nowhere. Anything could happen to us. And we did get a bit scared. But we'd gone on holiday armed with colouring books and crayons and pencils and all sorts of things, just in case we were able to give any out to some children there. We're taking them with us. And as we neared the village, his little village, I don't know if you've seen Lord of the Rings, when Gandalf comes into town and all the kids are excited running behind, hoping for a firework. Well, these kids came running and they were so excited to see us. It was an incredible time. And Robert said to us, he turned around and said, any of the children under 5 years of age have never seen white skin yet, so you're going to be fascinating to them. And so we were loving it, but you know, they were just shouting after us, and it was amazing. Such a warm welcome. We got to the village and everyone was there to come and welcome us and see us. The kids were rubbing my forearms, wondering why there was so much hair on my forearms. It was absolutely amazing. And we saw him. There he is. Robert with his wife Christine. That's two of his teenage boys, and he had a teenage daughter as well who wasn't there. And they lived in that mud hut behind. They had one room, and under the bed there was a mattress that pulled out. So the three children, and they're quite old teenagers, they shared one mattress, and the parents shared the mattress above. And they'd put little flowers all over the house to welcome us and to make it look beautiful. It was an incredible time. We handed out our gifts to the children, and we then went to the river to collect water. And it was really funny because they were surprised. Nikki didn't know how to lug a 10-gallon container onto her head and wander back with it just balanced on her head talking to the kids. But here she is with some of the children. It was just one of the best times ever, actually. We had such a great time. And we found out that Robert had to leave for work, let's get this right, at 5 a.m. for the two-hour walk to work. So everything that we'd done in a tuk-tuk, he walked. For the two-hour walk to work, and he'd work until 9 or 10 p.m. and get home for about midnight, having walked home. And then he'd have 5 hours in bed, get up, walk to work, and that was his 6 days a week. He did that. And when we finally got back to our room, we hatched a plan. The next day we did some research and we left our hotel. It was quite a long way, but we went to the only bike shop that we could find in the area. And we found a top-notch mountain bike. And we bought it and we loaded it up with, you know, bells and bike stands and lights and all the things we thought he might want on there. And then we loaded it very precariously into the back of a tuk-tuk and we headed off to the village again. Robert was at work, but the whole village saw us coming and they came out again. And when they saw the bike, oh my goodness, it was a village party. It was the best atmosphere. It was better than World Cup winning, who knows what that feels like, moments. You know, ladies winning the netball gold at the Commonwealth this morning, whatever it is. Yeah, it was so much more than any of that stuff. And it was just incredible that they were so excited to see this bike. And it's such a simple thing for us to give. And the next day, Robert called us over from the table, said, "Can you come out? I want you to take some pictures of me, please." And here he is, absolutely loving his bike. Yes! There he is again. Robert, you legend. I love that guy. And I took his details on a bit of paper because I only had a post office box for him in one of the towns, and I lost the bit of paper, and I phoned the hotel, and they couldn't work out who I was after, and it was the biggest nightmare ever. And I was speaking with someone at Spring Harvest, and they're going to Kenya, to the Malindi Beach area, to do some stuff, and they're going to try and locate this guy for me. And I cannot wait, because I know that there's more we're supposed to do for him. But his two-hour walk each way had become a 20-minute bike ride. So that meant he got 3 hours, 20 minutes longer, about 17 hours a week longer at home, which was simple for us, but so good for him. And it was one of the best things we've ever done. It seriously was. That's quite a long story, isn't it? That takes quite a long chunk of what I'm going to say this morning, but it's important. This morning, we're looking at the fact that our faith here at Skylark Church, one of our distinctives, is that our faith needs to be more than words. Our faith is more than words. Let's go together for a sec to James chapter 2. James chapter 2, this is the NIV, from 14 to 24. Now, this has long been one of my favorite books. Growing up, I loved it because it was no nonsense. And I've said to you before that I kind of grew up being no nonsense, you know. If I was playing sport and I was rubbish, I'd rather just be told I was rubbish. Don't say bad luck. You know, I didn't want bad luck. I was like, I was rubbish. Just tell me I'm rubbish and I'll get better. And so that's just me. And I know not everyone is pastored in that way. But I like the fact that James is no nonsense. That this book is tough discipleship. It's challenging and it pulls no punches. So I don't want to pull any punches either this morning. Faith and deeds from verse 14. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds, can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, "Go in peace, keep warm and well fed," but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, "You have faith, I have deeds." Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. You believe that there is one God. Good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. You foolish person. Do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless? Keep reading out there, but I forgot the slide here. Was not our father Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that his faith and his actions were working together, and his faith was made complete by what he did. And the scripture was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. And he was called God's friend. You see that a person is considered righteous by what they do and not by faith alone. More than words. Faith and actions working together. His actions when he offered his son Isaac were the things that counted him as being righteous, not the fact that he just believed God, but he outworked it in what he did. You see, it isn't simply about what we say we believe, but also about how we evidence what we believe through our actions. And in fact, more is shown about what we believe by the way we behave than by what we say we believe. Just think on that for a sec. It's not what we say, but what we do. Abraham didn't just simply say he believed God. His actions displayed that he believed God. There's movement. Faith involves action. Now, it's worth saying, because this has been the argument historically that why some people don't like James, you can't be saved by your works. You're saved through faith in Jesus, okay? But the evidence of being saved through faith in Jesus should be that we do things for him. So once we believe in him and we've made that connection, our hands become his hands, our feet become his feet, our mouth becomes his mouth. So we're not saved by doing great things and buying a bike for somebody. That doesn't save anybody. But it's evidence of the fact that we've been saved. Sitting on a beach, telling someone that we're Christians, just because he looks very swish in a lovely white outfit, we had no idea the level of poverty that was around that man's life. We had no idea, because he just looked so smart and swish. We thought, well, you know, he's got a decent job, he'll be fine. But sitting there telling him that we're Christians, but not allowing him to extend the gift of hospitality to us because we're a bit fearful, or not really wanting to put in the effort, that was the honest thing, that's why it took 3 times. We're on holiday after all, and we've had a tough year. It wouldn't have been that bad, would it? But think of the blessing that we received when we got up and we got involved. Think of the blessing he received and his village received and the children received just from having some pencils and colouring books and paper to play with, and the party they all had, and the fact that they could probably find out that Jesus was alive and real and cared for them. It's more than words, it's actions too. And after we had seen Robert's home, we were hit with a question. What are you going to do with what you've seen and experienced? And I want to throw that question out to us all today. For me again, and often we don't have time to stop and think during a message, so I'm going to just give us a minute, a whole minute. What are you going to do with what you have seen and experienced? One of the things that can hold us back is that it's all too overwhelming. It's true, isn't it? When Jesus was on the earth, people didn't necessarily know what was going on all over the region, in every village and every city, and certainly not until a passing traveller or somebody returning home told them. Global thinking didn't exist. Jesus Christ Superstar. 1970, that musical was released, and Judas sang, "If you'd come today, you could have reached a whole nation. Israel in 4 BC had no mass communication." Tim Rice penned those lyrics in 1970, 7 years before the first home computer. No mobiles, no internet, 3 TV channels in the UK. 3 years before that, they'd been in black and white. He wrote it then. How much more could it have been written now? If you'd come today, think how many people you could have reached, Jesus. I say it all to point out that we live with information overload. In all areas of life, we are bombarded, and it affects how we see and respond to situations around us and further afield. We switch on the news, we get instant information from all over the world. It's too much to deal with, too much to cope with. We want to help, but because we're so overwhelmed, most of us do nothing. Rather than do something, being overwhelmed causes us to do nothing. We're paralyzed by the size of the problem, and we can become closed off and introspective, and then we think, as long as me and mine are okay, then, you know, what more can I do? That's enough. That isn't what we're called to. the earlier question still remains. What are you, me, going to do with what we've seen and experienced? In about 2006, my mum was working in Uganda. She ended up working there for 20 years. And she was working in health with HIV and AIDS. And we went over, Nikki and I went over, with Bev and a team of other people from the church. Just a small group of people, just to check out what was going on there and to pray over the land. And Bev had this encounter. She saw a child in a cot whose prognosis was really poor. They expected the child to die in the next few days. And Bev was there looking at this child, holding their hand. And God said to her, something along the lines of, you can do something about this. You can do something about this. Remember the question? What are you going to do with what you've seen and experienced? And Bev was like, God, what can I do about this? I lead a church in the UK. I'm not medical. I don't... What can I do for a dying child in Africa who's got HIV? What am I supposed to do with that? But it didn't leave her. And rather than bury it, she came back and she shared it here on this platform. That was the beginning of Cherish Uganda. That's phenomenal, isn't it? 30 people from this church felt called to do something about it. But do you want to know what's amazing? 9 people from this church left their homes, some selling up completely, and moved to Uganda. And if I just have a quick glance around, there's definitely 2 people I can see here. Normally I can see 6. Oh, hello, there's a family. So yes, that's 6. There's at least 7 of those 9 are still in the church today, having come back. Let's give them a round of applause, shall we? That's awesome. So many children's lives have been impacted. Half an hour down the road from where my mum was working with Mild May, Cherish Uganda bought land and began their first homes. And now at the moment, there's 52 children there in 7 homes, all children who are orphans, all being looked after by people they call their mama in that house. There are 230 in the Cherish High School that's been built, which is amazing. There's a health clinic which is serving the medical needs of the children and the surrounding communities. But employment and future is being provided to so many. And that's part of our, as a church, our ongoing legacy. And we continue to sow in. And there's a mission trip to Uganda, to Cherish Uganda, later this year. Probably already full up. I'll look to Andrea for that. Full up, Cherish? Mission trip this year? Nearly there. If what I've just said made you think, I want to go, you need to see Andrea. But that's part of our ongoing legacy. And I think that's incredible that in that moment, Bev answered the question. And you know what? Bev didn't even go. She stayed here and led the church. She shared the vision. The vision was caught and off it went. Okay? So if you get something from God and you're like, well, I can't do that because of X, Y, and Z, maybe you couldn't, but maybe you should share it. Maybe you should dream into it, pray into it, and maybe someone else will catch it and it can still happen. Yeah? That would be awesome, wouldn't it? This is an area of Romania. Outstretched hands of Romania. Whoop, whoop. And Andrea and the team have just returned from their, is Andrea's 6th time with team, 9th time of going to Romania. And rather than wait weeks and weeks and weeks, I said to Andrea, can you come and give us a quick update, really quick, as to what was happening out in Romania. Let's welcome Andrea back to the platform.
Sorry, I wasn't very kind of a bit cagey about the Uganda thing. The fact is, the first training day is coming up thick and fast, so you'd have to be quick, okay, if you're still wanting to come. What I want to first say is just how much Brad and Nora and the Outstretched Hands team love all of you and love Skylark. They really do. I'm not just saying that. They hold us up here as... They said that to me, and I was blown away by their love for us because of what they see us willing to do, to send teams over, to pray for them regularly. We have a prayer team which pray together every 2 months for Outstretched Hands. If you want to join that, we'd love to see you. But also the fact that you were willing to put your hands in your pockets and give towards a church that you don't know, but we shared with you about Oltenitsa, which is a village in this area, and you were able to give towards that, which means that they can purchase the land to build their church on, which is incredible. So thank you so much. So, and that's faith into action, isn't it? That is faith, actually thinking, it's not just sometimes about the going, it's about the giving, it's about the praying. Praying is faith in action, isn't it? Because we can say we're going to pray for somebody, but then it's actually doing it, and actually doing it regularly and supporting whoever it is or whatever it is that you're praying for. When I think of Outstretched Hands, I was talking to Brad on the minibus on the way. Tell me when I'm up for time. I was talking to Brad on the minibus on the way to the airport because he flew back from America after another. He has to do these fundraising trips every year, and they're like hard going because it's 3 weeks away from his family, just trying to keep that support for the ministry going. He had a great trip, but he drove us to the airport the morning after he'd got back from the airport after flying from America, like only having like 5 hours sleep or something, because he wanted to spend time with our team. That's how much they love us. And you send us each time we go. So, you know, receive that, that love from them. It's a mutual thing. And I was asking Brad, occurred to me, the legacy that he and Nora have is not just in Romania, but amongst us here, the people here that have gone to Romania on teams and then on to... It just spreads. Your legacy goes out in all different directions. It's not just this one stream. It's you know, your children and other people that hear about it that are inspired to take part in what's going on. And so, looking at our trip this year, amazing. We spent time in our training days talking about getting involved, stepping up, and not waiting to be asked to do something. And this team, this year, every team, every year has been amazing, and I'm so thankful. And this year, I really felt like people were just looking for what they could do all around them. We had examples of children washing feet of other children at the Hope Centre. Our kids got right in there with bowls of water, washing these feet of all the children. And the team, the first day we arrived, I said, just think what you can take with you that you can get stuck in, that you can go and sit with a child or pray with a child or whatever, or another person on the team. And I walked into the building because our minibus got there second. And I walked into the building, I'm going to embarrass Ian. To see him on the floor with six children on top of him trying to, you know, play because he was giving them horse rides, piggyback rides. So I got into the building to see that. So another member of the team playing a game with another child. Another one just getting stuck into doing the washing up and drying up. And I was just, it's simple things. You know, faith into action, actually doing it. But I just want to say that I feel really, really moved, actually, when I think that God asked me to do this with no experience, to step into this role, and how much my faith has increased by doing this, and how much I've grown by doing this. And actually stepping out into action is a chance for you to grow. Because if God says stuff to you and you're like, not sure, no, just put it to the back burner, it's too difficult, too hard. Don't miss out on what he's calling you to do. Brad said he said no the first time, which amazed me. He said no to going to Romania the first time. And then it was only the second time when God prodded him again that he said yes. Think of all those hundreds and probably thousands of lives that would not be impacted if him and Nora had not said yes and been obedient. And then I think, if I'd have said no, when Femi approached me all those years ago, if I'd have said no, I would be stopping other people from having that experience where they could step out and do something for God and grow in their faith. And that's a privilege. The best thing for me, I have to be honest, apart from the amazing relationship with Outstretched Hands. Sorry, I'm going very fast. I'm really sorry. Is seeing team members, the way they react, seeing their faith grow, seeing them step out, seeing God speak to them about things in their future, and having the privilege of having facilitated that is priceless, really. So if God's calling you to do something, no matter how small, whether it's praying for people, whether it's giving, whether it's going on a trip, whether it's whatever it is, stepping out, praying for the sick, whatever it might be, don't ignore that, because it's your chance to grow and experience something of God that you would never have ever have imagined was possible, and grow in your faith. The actions really, really do matter. So is that enough? Too much?
Thank you. Thank you. That was incredible. And ties in so brilliantly. Considering I only asked Andrea to do that a couple of minutes before the service started, this ties in excellently with what I'm about to say as well. So you may be sitting there thinking, what should I do? How should I get involved? Not just with Romania Cherish, things we've mentioned, but in everyday life. How can I demonstrate my faith by my actions? How can I do that? In my workplace, when I'm on holiday, when I'm at the pub, when I'm at home, when I'm at school, university or college, how can people know that I'm a Christian, not just because I tell them? I worked with people for a long time, and then they found out I was a Christian. They're like, oh, I didn't know you were Christian. I'm one too. So, blimey, we've been here for 3 years and neither of us knew. And it shouldn't just be because you wear a badge that says I'm a Christian. There should be something, a way that our lives are outworked, that makes a difference, I think. Jesus used to spend time alone with his Father, and I often make this point. He went up a mountain to get some time alone with his dad, and he was able to say this, and I've put the yellow bits in, obviously. So Jesus explained, I tell you the truth, the Son can do nothing by himself. He does only what he sees the Father doing. Whatever the Father does, the Son also does. You get involved by spending time hanging out at the feet of your Heavenly Father, by asking him to give you his eyes, by asking him to show you what it is you should do, by asking him the dangerous prayer of breaking your heart for the things that are breaking his. And he won't give you every need in the world, which is what he can feel. He'll give you the one that he wants you to be the hands into. We can't do everything, but it doesn't mean that we should do nothing. There's action involved here. All of those do's and does and doings, there's action involved. Let's make it our prayer every day that we'd be those whose faith is demonstrated to the world around us by how we live and not simply by what we say we believe. The world doesn't need to simply hear what we believe, they need it demonstrated. And we can start here as well. We can start here with the people in this church family. In fact, it's not just a sort of a Pete idea. It's vitally important that we love each other well. In John 13, the scene is set for the Last Supper. Jesus knows that his hour has come. Let's look at it together. It was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. I love this bit. All things are under Jesus' power. So, what does he do when he's got all the power of the universe like He-Man? So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. Amazing, you just mentioned children washing feet. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and, returning to his place, said, "Do you understand what I've done for you?" Sorry, he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you." And a bit later on, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." He talks with them for a little bit more, and then he announces that it's time to leave, and he's off to Gethsemane to arrest, to the cross. So these are important conversations. These are important actions that Jesus is doing. He doesn't do things by accident. He didn't do all the miracles and the parables and everything, and at this point thought, well, I kind of finished everything. I'll just wash your feet for a while. Jesus is much more deliberate than that. These are important conversations. He hasn't got much time left, and yet he decides to wash feet. Why? The answer is because this stuff is important. He's our teacher and our Lord, and he set an example for us to follow, and that is to wash each other's feet in whatever guise that takes. "By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." People aren't going to know we're his disciples by the way that we profess with our mouth. By saying, "We are his disciples," that's not how people are going to know. "We love Jesus." People are like, "Yeah, they're words. What? How do I know you love Jesus?" Not by what we say we believe, but how we demonstrate it. By the way that we love each other. So we need to be good at loving each other in this room. And the love needs to spill out into the world. Faith in actions. I hope it's been challenging. It's been quite simple, but sometimes simple messages are just the ones that just, they'll sit hopefully and stick in you. I want it to stick in me like a little dart that won't get out until I do something with it. Like James, I've tried to not pull any punches, but faith without actions is dead, his book said. We're saved by faith in Jesus. Let's get that right again, that's for sure, but it needs to be demonstrated. And this is one of our distinctives as a church. As a church, we're pushing on into new initiatives that are transforming lives. I was just able to tell somebody in the congregation who has a burning desire in them to see a borehole in a village in Nigeria to provide water for an incredible school and group of people around the school. They've managed to raise £300, and to get water for that village is going to cost £1,600. 1,600 quid. We took it to the directors. It's the fastest yes they've ever given. We're going to be directing that £1,600. We're going to be building a borehole in Nigeria. But the thing is, we want to do a lot more than that. So we're looking at how we can partner and how things can connect and not just throw a bit of money and turn our backs, but how we can connect and move forward together. So that is exciting. And that is because somebody in this congregation had a vision. They had a thing God put in their heart. They, as a family, sacrificed some of their money and some of their presents for the children at Christmas, that kind of thing. They said, "No, we're going to put this money in as seed money," and now the money is just falling in. And that's just the beginning. We're very excited. What is God going to do? You know, I wasn't going to say this just yet, but I think it's good to say it because it's probably one of those things that I can't do about the water thing, Nikki. God's put this thing in me. You know Tom's footwear? You buy a pair of Tom's footwear and it provides a pair of shoes for somebody in the third world. Well, we're going to be getting these water bottles. And what if we get really incredible water bottles, but this isn't the only borehole that we drill? How about we can come up with some kind of amazing business model, and I'm not a businessman, so I can't do it. Come up with an amazing business model that means we design these incredible bottles, and if people buy that, then some of the money from the bottle goes into water boring holes so that as we are hydrated, we're hydrating the world and all of that stuff. You see, that's a cool thing. So I've just got a few little ideas of mine on a whiteboard in our office, but that's all it is. This is inception stuff. Bev shared a little inception thought about Cherish Uganda, and look what happened. So I'm throwing it out there. Let's see who catches it. Let's see if there's something that can come off the back of that. We're, as a church, we're pushing on into new initiatives, as I said. We're transforming lives, but there is more. It's not just for a few. It's for many. It's not just for this incredible church that we're part of to say, our church are amazing, we're doing all of this. We have a personal challenge as well to live our faith into action. May our faith be more than words. What I want to do this morning, just as a response, Andrea, could you come and start playing Be Glorified? Ben, I think I'll play. Where are we? I'll play. We're going to sing Be Glorified, which is a song that we wrote, and it talks about our hands, you know, that we raise up to God being used to impact the lives of other people. And it's a living sacrifices kind of song, the whole of our life being an offering to God. So we're going to sing that together. And if you'd like to stand with me, that would be great. And also, during this song, I'm going to give you an invitation to just come to the front. If you're somebody who's like, yep, I need to do this. I need to put my faith into action. And it's a good way to demonstrate it. It's not holy ground down here. But in putting faith into action, by even taking a step to get out of your chairs and come to here, it's kind of showing your heart, this is what I want. This is what I want. This is what I want to do. And I'm not just going to stand in my place and say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get out of my comfort zone and come to the front. So if you want to do that at some stage through, someone will come and pray with you. Hopefully, the church will empty to the front. We'll all have to pray for each other, because we all need to be those who put our faith in action.